breeding. I know. But we had blessing of the animals last week, and I didn't get a chance to deal properly at or at all with Mary and Martha, and I'm going to wait 3 more years for that. So that's what we're doing today. So I don't know if you've noticed, but a lot of people are very diet conscious these days. Everyone seems to have a theory about what you should eat in order to be healthy. And there's a never-ending stream of new and improved approaches to proper nutrition. And as many of you know, I have my own set of weirdness when it comes to eating. And I try to read a fair amount about that. But you know what? Over and over, the bottom line, once you've cleared away all the hype and the product selling, the bottom line for healthy nutrition seems to be balance. A truly healthy diet, chock of all chocks, is a balance of grains, protein, dairy or equivalent, produce, fruits and vegetables. In the end, it's not rocket science. It's not some mystery that only the initiated can figure out. There are no secrets to it. It's common sense and balance. So easy, really, and very hard to achieve. So I thought of that as I was reading the Amos reading this morning. This is the passage where he uses the basket of ripe summer fruit. One thing, I know I'm pushing, okay, just go. One thing about this diet means is fruit, and one of the things we need for balance in our understanding of God's will is this particular basket of fruit from Amos. Ripe summer fruit. The week before last, he used another image, a plumb line. You remember that? A plumb line. Saying, you folks are off kilter. You're just off kilter. You're not okay. This week it's ripe fruit. Just a little review about Amos before we go on. Amos is a prophet. He's living in Israel at a time of peace and prosperity. It was the reign of Jeroboam. And the country was as powerful and stable as it was ever going to get. When times are easy and when people don't have to struggle to eat, when they're not suffering war, certain things can happen. One is that there sets in, or can set in, a certain complacency, an understanding that these things are God's blessings, and that somehow we're being rewarded by God for being good. And you can hear that message anytime you want on TV preaching. You know, prosperity gospel. You be good, you're going to be rich. And if you just send me 1998, I'll tell you how. Money, power, you can be rewarded again. And the corollary of that, the unspoken corollary often, is that, of course, if you're not prosperous and healthy and all of those things, that, well, somehow that's your fault because God is clearly not blessing you, and there must be a reason for that. It's a handy little theological system here. You're on the right side of it. So there was some of that going on. And also, as often happens in societies where there is prosperity, power gets out of balance, concentrated in the hands of a few, and the needs of the poor and most vulnerable are overlooked. And that's what was happening. And into that situation plunders Amos. He's a man on fire, he's angry, and he's on a quest for justice. And he is, let's say, to put it mildly, he's not subtle. He's not polished. He's just mad. Righteous anger, and he's willing to say it loudly. He's a farmer, a herdsman, a dresser of sycamores. I don't really know what that is, but I know that it's not a learned position. And he says, a message that's really hard to hear. He says, you think this time of peace and prosperity is going to last? Yeah. Take a look at what's happening underneath. The poor are being exploited. There's a rich group of the elite who aren't paying attention to the needs of the weakest. No one notices. No one cares. It looks like we're peaceful, and it looks like we're prosperous, but the scales of justice are unbalanced. They're not balanced at all, and it cannot continue this way forever. This whole society is like a basket of strawberries. You know how in the stores sometimes they put these baskets together and all the good ones are on top, and you have to really watch this underneath? It's like that. It's like a basket of fruit like that. And he says, we've got really ripe fruit just on the edge, and we better start making jam. We better start doing something with that fruit, because it's going to rot and then pop. The fruit is ripe. We've got to act now. We've got to restore the balance of justice, do what's right, get some perspective back. And so in the passage that Deb read, he gave examples of what he meant. So the sellers of grain and so on were using unbalanced weights, and they would stop for the Sabbath because it was the law, but they're just waiting for it to be over until they could start making money again. And you know how that works. He gives example after example. Instead of receiving the Sabbath like the gift that it is, craving it like delicious fruit, like a gift. No. They're waiting for it to be over because then they can start making money. False balances have been used. And he says, the time is now, the fruit is ripe for our society and for you. Increasingly, science and theology are saying the same thing, that the universe moves toward union, is made of the same stuff, and is one. This creation is formed to be and to grow in sacred balance, of which we and all creatures are a part. And part of what's out of balance is our sense of who we are in relation to creation. We talked a little bit about this last week at the blessing of the animals. We've acted, we humans, I mean, as though we were the owners, apart from the earth. We've used it and exploited it for our own purposes without regard or respect for animals or the land or future generations. And now is the time to find the balance. Again, it's time to make jam. Or the fruit will rot. It's time to take our rightful place as part of the sacred balance of things. So if this is true for society, what about you personally? Balance, would you say your life is balanced? What would it mean to live a balanced life? Seems to me that Luke is trying to give us a clue. I know you know this, but Luke is a great author. He's a great writer. He knows what he's doing. And it's so interesting to watch not only the Jesus stories he chooses to tell, but how he tells them and how he arranges them. For example, just before this, he tells us the story of the Good Samaritan. You know the story of the Good Samaritan? The guy's going down from Jerusalem to Jericho. Okay. The punchline, he says, who do you think was the neighbor to the guy who fell among the thieves? And the lawyer said, the guy who helped him. And his punchline is, yeah, go to the sin. Do that. The original question had been, teacher, what must I do to inherit eternal life? And the answer was that, be a good neighbor. The guy goes in, who is my neighbor? Well, anyone, the story says, anyone who needs my help, and perhaps mostly those who are looked down upon and despised by others. Who is that? There are a lot of people who need help. And we could spend all day, every day. And it could become overwhelming. And Jesus knew that, and Luke knew it too. And so right after the story of the Good Samaritan, he places this one. The Good Samaritan teaches us to do the neighborly thing. And this story about Mary and Martha seems to be saying there are times when you need not to do things as well. It's part of the balance of things. It's also saying a lot between the lines about a proper balance between men and women as well. In this short little passage, Luke has both Mary and Martha challenging traditional female roles. Martha seems to own the house. And she talks to Jesus in a very familiar way. She accepts the role of head of the house and the responsibility that goes with it to offer hospitality. Mary sits at his feet like a disciple. So there's quite a bit about that kind of balance too. In your life, balance between being and doing, balance between doing things for other people and for yourself and time with God. And I know those lines are very blurry, but still. If you took your day timer took a week, a typical week of yours, and wrote down everything you did in that week, with the times marked beside them, and maybe energy too, because that's not the same as time, How would it stack up, do you think? Is there a good balance of time for good works, time for you, time at the feet of Jesus? And as I was writing this, I thought that maybe that's not fair either, because maybe it should be balanced over a lifetime. Because I know that there are times in your life, you've got three little kids, you don't have a lot of time to sit at the feet of Jesus, right? Times when you've got more energy and so on. What does the balance look like for you right now? And if you feel there's an imbalance, what are you going to do about that? Because there's no better time. The fruit is ripe. And the time is now. And your health is at stake. Your physical health, we're learning more and more about that part. And your emotional, spiritual health. We need balance. So I don't know what it is that you need. More time alone. More time in prayer. More time spent doing things for others besides yourself. No, that's a big part of what the story is inviting us to. It's not about holding one of the sisters, Mary good, Martha bad. That's an old patriarchal reading that's got to go. It's not about holding one of the sisters up against the other, not honoring one way of being is better than another, but inviting us to embody both. I don't know if you've ever heard sermons pitting the sisters against each other, but that's not helpful, and it's not the whole story. They are not caricatures. On the one hand, a neurotic, fussy housekeeper, and on the other hand, a lazy dreamer. No. When Lazarus dies, their brother, John reports that it was Mary who stayed home and Martha who went out to meet Jesus and ended up in a theological conversation with him. These women are fuller characters than has been presented. The other thing about the text is that Martha is doing the correct, prescribed thing to do. In Israel at that time, hospitality was a huge concept. It was a social and religious duty to provide hospitality. It was what the head of the household did for guests. So like the priest in the story last week, or a week ago, Martha was doing what was right, what was expected by custom and ritual, socially and religiously. It's Mary who's breaking the rules, if you will. So part of what's being asked of us here is also, what's the balance between those two things? When is it right to do what's expected? And when is the right thing to break the rules in the service of a greater good? Good questions. No easy answers. I'm just asking. Actually, the text is asking. These sisters ask us to take a good look at ourselves, and together they represent a home, a way of being that honors life and praises God by a combination of service and silence, being and doing. A diet, if you will. A delicious, nutritious blend of things. Food for their own souls, food for the guest, and for the stranger. From Amos, a call to take that diet not only into our personal lives, but into the economic and political worlds in which we live. Our world, our society is hungry. We all need the same diet. And it's there ready for us, a basket of ripe summer food. And how to act now. Restore the sacred balance in all of life, starting right here and right now. So we're going to come to the table very shortly and trust that there's food for us there and for, not only for us, but for the world. Amen.